bad wood. Welcome everyone to episode 38, season 2 of the Premier Pod. I'm your host, Yash Bika, joined by my co-host, Tyler Chan. In this episode, we're going to look back at the United versus Chelsea matchup, the VAR situation in the Liverpool-Norwich game, quickly look into how City dominated West Ham and their 5-0 victory, and finally, go back and look back at the UEFA Super Cup where Liverpool beat Chelsea. But to start things off, we have to get things started with the United versus Chelsea matchup. Manchester United beating Chelsea at home at Old Trafford, 4-0. An emphatic display, Rashford scoring twice, Martial getting on the score sheet, and their new signing, Daniel James, scoring on his debut goal at Old Trafford and at the Stretford end too. Storybook opening for him. I mean, that was just an absolute insane goal. It wasn't the prettiest of goals, but the fact that he scored it at his debut and his celebration was just absolutely crazy. I think it was one of the coolest moments of that matchup for me. But what a way for Manchester United to start off the league, but what a terrible way for Chelsea to start off the league. A 4-0 defeat. Not looking too hot right now for Frank Lampard's side.
Yeah, it definitely was a big surprise, in my opinion, because going into this game, Yash and I both predicted that it could go either way in some ways. Yash predicted that United would win, of course, because he's a United fan, but I thought it'd be more even. And in the beginning, in the first half, it was a little bit more even. There were times when Chelsea actually did hit the post. Sammy Abraham did hit the post very early in the game, and then later on, Emerson hit the post, or hit the crossbar, actually. So it could have gone either way, but after United got the first goal, Chelsea just couldn't really cope with the fact that United could really hit them on the counterattack, because with Rashford up top and Martial up top,
Martial has the number 9 shirt again.
Yeah, Martial has, I don't know why he has number 9 again, but you know, at least now he can say he is the pure striker. He can step up to the role that Lukaku has left void for, and they did very well, because this is something that we kind of alluded to, that they both are very pacey players and that they could beat a lot of offside traps and high lines because of how quickly they could counterattack, and they really showed it in this game. So it was really alarming to see that United were so good at the high press while also seeing how poorly Chelsea were defending in this game, because if Chelsea are going to be like this throughout the season,
This is not looking good.
I'm not sure they're going to finish top six if they're going to be defending like this.
Yeah, and obviously it was the first game of the season, but another thing I saw was, like you mentioned, the high press of United, something we did not see very consistently under Mourinho. There were times when Mourinho would display like a high-pressing system, but you know, this new system Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has put in, I mean, we literally saw the front three, like Martial, Rashford, Lingard, just all bombing, like, you know, all pressing the Chelsea defense and Kepa. And that led to, there was a couple of times Kepa was, you know, the United player cornered him and he didn't really have an out ball to go to. So he was just kind of knocking the ball out in the middle of the midfield, and United were able to pick it up and hit him on another attack. So it looked like a really positive, really good display for United. And I think another thing that jumped out to me as a United fan was a lot of times in the top six matches last season, United would play good for, you know, a couple minutes of the game and maybe get a goal and maybe get ahead. But after they get that goal, their performance starts to dip a little bit. They start to get back, start to get lazy, start to, you know, concede possession and not try to go forward and get more goals. But as we saw with this game, that intensity never slowed down. They were constantly kept pressing and pressing and pressing. Even when Daniel James came on, like, they were still pressing, even though they were up 3-0. So I think that's like a mindset change that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer slowly implemented too, is that just because United get a goal up ahead, their main focus is how many more can we get after that. And I think that's a very positive approach and a positive thing I saw as a United fan.
Mm-hmm. And there was also a thing that I saw in United, is that they had a lot of rhythm, where when you watch Chelsea try to pass and try to pass out the back, they couldn't even string 3-4 passes together. It just felt like they had no synchronization. And I think it's because they had so many players in the squad, in the starting 11, that weren't in the main consistent starting 11 last season. Mm-hmm. So for example, certain key players like David Luiz, he actually got
transferred
to Arsenal for £8 million on transfer deadline day, which is insane because now Kurt Zouma is starting and then Rüdiger still isn't in starting 11.
Yeah.
So Andreas Christensen started in his place.
They look
so those
poor.
Two were, they're very poor as a center back pairing.
And how do you feel about that? Because you looked, you know, before the game or like when we had our preview episode, you were pretty high on Kurt Zouma, which was fair because of his performances last season with Everton. But him and Christensen didn't really look that strong as a pairing last week. And it doesn't bode well for Chelsea fans considering they already lost David Luiz to a transfer. And the back line, if it's that shaky all season, it can be very dangerous for them going forward.
Mm-hmm. I will say that Conte did not start this game because he did pick up an injury during preseason, but he did get subbed in, although it was a little too late because they're starting to see goals even after he came in. But I think when he starts starting games again, he will be very beneficial to Kurt Zouma and Christensen as well. And also once Rüdiger gets back, he will also definitely be something or someone who will be a positive impact into that back line. But I also don't like Jorginho being a center defensive mid in the Premier League because
I was going to say this. So their midfield that they started the game with was Ross Barkley, Jorginho, and I believe Kovacic was in that lineup.
Yeah, Kovacic as well.
That's
not very physical.
Yeah, not very physical. And plus, all three of those guys don't like to defend. Even when Sarri was playing Jorginho as a CDM type thing, it was more of a playmaking CDM rather than a guy that was going to actually sit there and, you know, break up play. All three of those guys are not known to be very good defensively. And the fact that you played them all three in a midfield and they're not very physical it doesn't lead to very good results in the Premier League because teams will just outplay them and, you know, they'll just outbattle them in the midfield. And we just saw that against United, who had Paul Pogba, McTominay, Pereira was in there. So more like physicality on United's side in the midfield.
Mm-hmm. And also, there wasn't that much pace that was available to Chelsea to like utilize because in the formation, they had a 4-2-3-1 and their wingers were Pedro and Ross Barkley. And Pedro, he used to be kind of fast, but now he's getting old, so he's losing some pace. And Ross Barkley was never known to be fast. So how United were able to exploit a high line, the pace of, you know, Jesse Lingard, Rashford, and Martial, Chelsea had to pass slowly up and move up the field because they didn't really have an option to really press United and really exploit a back line that United had. And I was actually very impressed with how Harry Maguire and Aaron Wan-Bissaka were able to just slide into that back line.
Oh, yeah.
And just control.
I was going to bring that up.
Chelsea attack.
Man, it was so nice as a United fan finally seeing a legit back four. You know, I guess as a Liverpool fan, it must have been really nice last season to finally see an actual back four come together. But we have a proper right back, a proper left back, and a great center back pairing right now. I know it's only been one game, but Lindelof and Maguire, if they can replicate whatever they did against Chelsea for, you know, throughout the rest of the season, it's going to make David De Gea's job a lot easier. I know they were cut apart a little bit in the beginning, but once they started to get a little bit more comfortable and got a lead together, it seemed like, you know, there was no way that they were going to concede a goal. And I think Maguire had a quote after the game mentioning something about making United a fortress again and having the mindset of like, okay, even though we were up 3-0, Maguire said he wanted to keep a clean sheet. And I think that type of mindset of keeping a clean sheet has been missing in the United backline. In terms of that leader, that center back leader to just lead them and, like, you know, make sure that they don't concede a goal. And also, it's worth pointing out that this was the first time since Matteo Darmian was signed at Manchester United that Darmian, Smalling, or Jones were not in the matchday squad. So, big times coming up ahead for United. The fact that all three of those guys are not included in the matchday squad. I think Axel Tuanzebe, the young center back, was included as one of the substitutes. So, it looks like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, even though he didn't actually physically sell some of these players, I feel like now we're starting to see that he's going to start transitioning a lot of them out of the squad. And, you know, something that Klopp did, kind of like shunning these guys from the squad and making it known that, hey, even though you're still here, there's the chances of you starting or playing, getting actual game time are very slim to none. So I think it's a good foothold that Solskjaer has put into the squad.
And then on the flip side, we saw Christian Pulisic, a key player that we were highlighting last week. He actually was on the bench. He didn't start. And to me, this is kind of a mistake, because I feel like in a big game like this, especially against Manchester United, the key starting 11s for both teams is crucial. And Josh just mentioned that the message that the manager puts out there for who he starts and who he benches will really play an impact on who, like on the players. So having Christian Pulisic start on the bench while Mason Mount gets the start. And I know Mason Mount did play under Frank Lampard at Derby County last season, so he knows what Frank Lampard wants. But coming from the championship and playing on a team that was competing for the title in the Bundesliga are two completely different calibers. So it felt like Mason Mount was kind of just preferred because Frank Lampard wanted to play a certain style, which is fair because, you know, in order to win, you have to be able to execute what the manager wants. Maybe Mason Mount definitely had a better idea of over Christian Pulisic, but Christian Pulisic, he definitely had a big impact coming into the game.
Yeah, I was going to say, when he came on, they created a little bit more, and he just seemed like he was, if Chelsea were going to like nick a goal back, it was through Christian Pulisic more than anyone else on that squad.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of rough, but also you do have to consider that they were playing in the Super Cup the following Wednesday, which we will discuss, but I feel like Chelsea just got the starting 11 wrong this game.
You could definitely tell, like, I know both of these guys are rookie managers per se, but you could definitely tell that Frank Lampard, in his Premier League debut as a manager, did get his tactical setup a bit wrong. And that, you know, that comes with time. Every manager makes their mistakes. I think Frank Lampard eventually, you know, through these mistakes and trials, will get the starting 11 he wants and figure out what he needs to do to get the best, get the most out of his squad. But certainly not the best go at it in his first in his debut as a Premier League manager, losing 4-0. But to quickly go into another matchup, Liverpool versus Norwich, I predicted the right scoreline. I got 4-1 right. Here, we're not going to dig too much into this one because it was a very easy Liverpool win. But the bigger overarching theme on this game was the VAR. The first Premier League game ever to include VAR, and it had a bit of a mess up. Before the start of the second half, there was a huge VAR delay, and it was delaying the start of the game, delaying the start of the second half for quite a bit of time, and you could definitely see the fans were getting a little angsty and just a little bit annoyed by that. But it just seemed kind of puzzling to me that they were having a little bit of mishaps with VAR, considering that Premier League waited an extra bit of time before implementing the technology. But the first game of the season, it didn't turn out too well, but you did see in the City versus West Ham game, if you did watch that it actually saved West Ham from conceding an early goal within the first couple minutes of the match, but eventually they did lose 5-0. But how would you say VAR is going to impact the Premier League as we saw it during the first weekend of the season?
For me, watching Premier League this season, it reminded me a lot of like watching an NFL game, which is like National Football League in America. And because it just felt like everything had to be reviewed.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that everything had to be reviewed, it felt a lot different watching a soccer game this season in particular, because it felt like everything is getting rule-sharked, which is good in that there won't be controversy, or I should say as much controversy, because even then, especially Sterling's or Gabriel Jesus' disallowed goal in the West Ham versus Manchester City game, where Sterling was offside literally because of like an armpit length.
Yeah.
Like that was insane. And I know this is good overall because you can't argue against the rules, but even then, at some point, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, let's just play, you know? We're here to watch soccer. I know these are the rules, but even then, like, it's a little rough. And even in that same game where Manchester City versus West Ham, they had to retake a penalty because of Fabianski.
Yep. And you know, that's to me the goalkeeping when it comes to penalty shootouts, or like whenever there is a penalty, I think that's going to be the biggest thing. Because if you watch the Women's World Cup or if you watched MLS, seemingly every time there's a penalty kick, you can just bet that it's going to have to be retaken because the goalkeeper is always jumping off his line, just because you know there was no checkup on that. And I feel like we're going to see a lot of retaken penalty kicks, and that's just unfortunate, you know, for whichever side you're rooting for, because that just adds more, you know, parity to the penalty kick. But overall, it did serve its purpose in the Watford game. We saw Willy Bolly's own goal. It seems like that man is always getting an own goal somewhere, but his own goal was, a handball. He had a handball in the goal. It was disallowed. So that saved, that saved them in that game. But I think VAR will serve its purpose. But as Tyler said, I think they need to take a bit of a chill pill when it comes to the amount of times they review something, because even the stuff that's clear and obvious, they continue to review it for a little bit of time. And I feel like there's no need for that. I feel like if it's that obvious, we can just kind of go forward with that, you know, but it's in its first year in the Premier League, and I think we're going to see a lot of trials with it. But I mean, you can't argue with the results. VAR is here and here to stay.
Yes. And just to backtrack on something Yosu was mentioning about goalkeeping, is that there's now a rule in the Premier League where when a goalie is defending a penalty kick, he has to keep one foot on the line as the kick is taken. So if he jumps off that line and his foot leaves that goal line, then the penalty has to be retaken. So in the West Ham game in particular, Declan Rice also did encroach in the goal box zone, so that's also why they had to retake it. But I also agree with Yosh, because like everything has to be reviewed, and even if it's clear and obvious, it's a little much. But since this is new in the Premier League, even though they did wait the year, I think there will still be some a learning curve, and we're gonna have to just get a little used to it. And I assume over a few months, it will be something that's gonna be second nature to us. Like we won't even really notice it. But for now, because there's so much review going on, it seems like every play is being reviewed, from every foul, every potential goal, every corner kick, every time the ball goes out, basically, or every time there's a dead ball, it feels like it just has to be reviewed. And I'm like, all right, at some points, we're starting to lose some momentum here and some fluidity of what really made soccer so watchable and so playable. So I think it's something we just have to get used to, because there are other leagues and other competitions that have VAR that are very fluid. So we'll just have to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely the first season under it, so there's going to be some trials that go along with it. But quickly pivoting into sort of the other people that were in the top six last season, Tottenham, Arsenal, and City. Obviously, we talked about the City result beating West Ham 5-0. A big player I saw in that game was Mahrez. With Leroy Sané, the big news coming out of him, I believe having an ACL tear, he's pretty much going to be out for a majority of the season. So this leads to Mahrez having a chance to get back into the starting 11. We saw last season that we didn't really see the best out of him consistently, because he was you know, in and out of the lineup. But when he did play and was in momentum, made a big impact for City. Played really well in this game. I think that this season could potentially be the season we see Riyad Mahrez shine again, the way he did in Leicester's title-winning season. So if they can get that type of Mahrez to come out, watch out. City is definitely going to be – that just adds another dynamic element to City, because unlike other City players, I would say, Mahrez isn't afraid to, you know, take it on and take someone on 1v1 or just take a shot. I think sometimes some of the City players can get a little too caught up in playing 1-2 passing and just kind of working their way towards goal. Mahrez is a guy for me that just, you know, whenever he sees an opening, he's not afraid to take a shot. And I think adding that element to City's attack makes them very, very dangerous.
And it also helps that Mahrez is the type of player that could play every game if he has to, because when he was on that title-winning Leicester team, he started every game. But once he went to Manchester City, he was on the bench. He wasn't consistently in the starting 11. But now, because he has no one really to rotate with, since Sané's going to be out for majority of the season, we're going to have to rely – or Manchester City are going to have to rely on him basically week in and week out for not only the Premier League, but for all the domestic competitions and also the Champions League as well. But we know Pep Guardiola, he's definitely going to change the starting 11. We never know what that starting 11 is going to look like. Even the back, everything from the back four to the front three, it could be different every week. But for sure, Mahrez this season is going to have a much bigger role. And I think he'll, I think he'll do well.
Yeah. And then Arsenal-Newcastle. Arsenal beating Newcastle 1-0. Aubameyang getting on the goal sheet. But a couple big news for Arsenal. At the time when we recorded, it was Wednesday of last week, and that wasn't the transfer deadline day. But Arsenal did make a couple splashes on transfer deadline day. They signed Kieran Tierney, and they signed David Luiz from Chelsea. A couple big signings for them. Obviously, the big one they had to let go is Alex Iwobi. They kept Mkhitaryan instead. But Arsenal splashing the cash. Nicolas Pepe was not in the starting 11, but he did come on, and he didn't get a goal. But I think this Arsenal attack is going to look a lot better. And then Kieran Tierney, obviously, he has to recover from injury. But if they can get him back, slot him in, and then I'm sure David Luiz, you know, if Arsenal spent that much, you know, they didn't spend a lot of money, but, you know, prioritizing David Luiz, it makes me feel like they're going to start, you know, ushering out Mustafi from the starting 11. So if that's the case, you know, we're going to see more David Luiz in there. So Arsenal going to be looking a little bit brighter going forward. I think this game, they did struggle a little bit, but they hit Newcastle well on a counterattack.
And I was surprised to see that Arsenal got a clean sheet this game. I know it was against Newcastle, and Newcastle aren't very strong in the offense, but Joelinton did start this game. Almiron once again did start this game. So we did see some of the new players start this game that we highlighted last week that could make a big impact. And they did have some snippets where they could have scored. Like Joelinton, for example, did receive a cross, one cross in particular in the game from Matt Ritchie that, if he put it on target, it would have challenged Bert Leno, especially, but he unfortunately put it off frame. So Newcastle, although aren't very strong in general, they could have tied Arsenal, honestly. But once again, because Arsenal did have a lot better starting 11 coming into the game with their front three of, well, actually, they didn't start Lacazette, which is also a little surprising.
Yeah.
So it was just...
Laka was on the bench. Yes. A bit weird.
So it was just Aubameyang, Reece Nelson, Joseph Willock, and Hendrik Mkhitaryan. So this is a very different front four, actually. So despite that, I mean, Newcastle is a team that you could probably experiment against, but even then, Aubameyang by himself is probably much better than majority of the Newcastle, even the Newcastle front, even if you put multiple players together. But...
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Aubameyang is definitely on the top tier of A-plus strikers in the Premier League.
What I'm basically saying is that this result isn't really surprising.
Yeah, no, it's not surprising. I think it was just Aubameyang getting on the score sheet was a big one, and then obviously the big signings Arsenal made on deadline day. Quickly going into their North London rivals, Tottenham, and Ndombele getting his debut goal. A lot of debut goals in the Premier League, which was really nice to see, but having a really big, like a long shot effort for his debut goal, and then Kane answering with a double, a brace for him, getting Tottenham a 3-1 win. But Aston Villa, we're scaring Tottenham for a good bit of time, but we're not able to get the job done, and Tottenham were able to get the win.
And I thought Aston Villa actually did pretty well. There were times when I thought maybe Aston Villa could have snuck in a draw, because although certain players that I thought were going to do well, like Jack Grealish and Wesley, were going to turn up, actually those two players in particular weren't really the main focal points of Aston Villa. It was more John McGinn and Trezeguet along the right side of the attack that really shined for me in that game. But because Tottenham were pretty relentless, Harry Kane got some scrappy goals at the very end to win. But overall, I was a little impressed by Aston Villa, and especially actually the promoted teams, because although two of the three didn't pick up any points, so Norwich didn't pick up any points against Liverpool, but Sheffield United did pick up some points against Bournemouth, I was actually surprised to see how well they're performing in the first week, opening weekend, against these teams in the Premier League, because being in the Championship is a whole different league, of course, obviously, but We never usually think that these teams could really do well from the start. Usually takes a few games, but from the get-go, seems like these teams in particular, compared to last season and the previous seasons, they're doing pretty well. So we'll see.
Yeah. I wasn't – to be fair, I think Sheffield did do well. Now, Aston Villa obviously held their own, but I didn't think Norwich in particular played that well. Yeah. I think from my eyes personally, I just think Norwich kind of got outplayed by Liverpool, but obviously they were playing the top two team in the Premier League, Liverpool. Mm-hmm. So that was a tough matchup for them. But you know, this could be the start of maybe the newly promoted side making an actual challenge to stay in the league. But we still got a long season to go. But quickly, Tyler, I know you mentioned this with Crystal Palace. You said that they were going to get relegated if Wilfried Zaha left the club. Unfortunately for Zaha, he handed in, I believe all the reports I was reading, he handed in a transfer request, but Crystal Palace did not acknowledge it and they still kept him. And now Zaha is still a Crystal Palace player. I don't know how I feel about that. I think it's going to be, you know, I can see where Crystal Palace, the upper management, is thinking in terms of, hey, you are our best player. We're not going to let you go. But there is, you know, there is a dark side to that, because when you have a guy that doesn't want to be there and has a lot of bad player morale, that can rub off to the other players, because you're talking about the best player at your club not wanting to be there and not, you know, not being super happy. So I think this may come back to bite them, and you know, they could be in a situation where they're kind of pressured into selling him. I think Van Dijk kind of did the same thing, where, you know, there was a point in time where he was just like, okay, I want to leave Southampton, and then that's what led to his move to Liverpool. Could you see a similar situation that Zaha is able to pull himself out of?
For me, Zaha is in a somewhat different situation, because Zaha did kind of originate from Crystal Palace, and Crystal Palace is a team that he went back to after not doing too well at Manchester United. So he does have an affinity towards the team, and the team does, of course, love him as well. But he did want to leave, and although he didn't get that request, and then of course since he submitted his request but it didn't get fulfilled, I could see him revolting, but I don't think he will. I think he will. Although in this first game he did start on the bench, I don't see him pulling a Van Dijk where he's not going to play every game. I still think they have to rely on him no matter how he's feeling and despite what he's thinking. And he's like, he's too crucial of a player not to play no matter like what's going on. So I think like throughout the season, we've seen in past circumstances, like certain players are in the situation, they just will just hold out and they just not play, not even make it on the bench. But I think in this situation, I think Zaha will play no matter what. And Crystal Palace will benefit from that, of course. So, and we did see him sub in halfway into the game against Everton. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think like the big thing for me is just that he was a guy that I think he wanted to have like a little bit of higher ambition to play for a bigger club. Mm-hmm. But for Zaha, I mean, like it must hurt him to see that, you know, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, like the other big players at the club, like all the good players that have come through Crystal Palace in a sense, you know, obviously not Wan-Bissaka level, but have been decent enough to move on to, you know, a different club, have all kind of moved past Crystal Palace. Mm-hmm. And, you know, things are just not looking any rosier than they once were when, you know, when he first got there. So I think for a certain extent, I get the hesitancy, because Zaha, you know, as we've seen before, when he went to Manchester United, failed to make an impact there. But that was also a very young Zaha. I think now that he's come back and, you know, he's had like, I think now it's like 5 seasons, like since he's come back at Crystal Palace, we've seen how good of a player he is. I personally think that, I don't know, I could definitely see him moving to another Premier League club when it comes to January time, just because I think, I don't know. It always bothers me when the player's in bad morale and it's just not very happy at a club, and especially a small club like Crystal mm-hmm. Palace. I don't know. It doesn't suit me very well, because I think we've seen this in the past with a whole slew of players, like big time players that are good enough for a bigger club. I could just definitely see it going bad at Crystal Palace.
Yes, I could also see him moving, as you mentioned, in January as well, but usually it's very hard to get big money moves in January, but saying that now, in these past couple seasons in January, we've seen significant moves in January, which is kind of surprising, like Coutinho's move, Van Dijk's move, so
Sanchez, Mkhitaryan.
So the list goes on, so who knows, maybe Zaha will get his dream move in January, and that's his next opportunity too, but until then, he will be a Crystal Palace player.
Yeah, and then quickly going into the UEFA Super Cup, Liverpool beating Chelsea, 5-4 in penalties. The game ended up 2-2 after overtime, after extra time, excuse me. And Liverpool coming out as victors. But the bigger storyline, Adrian, their backup goalkeeper to Geronimo Alisson, who got hurt in the Norwich game, got hurt because after winning the UEFA Super Cup, a fan invaded the pitch. And it was a bit of a wet surface. And as he was approaching the Liverpool team that was celebrating and huddling Adrian, he somehow managed to slip and just did a two-legged slide tackle. And Adrian basically fell and hurt his ankle in a freak accident, which basically rules him out for a couple of weeks. And his title is about to go off. That's Alisson, the main goalkeeper, out with an injury. Adrian, the guy you bought just to back up Alisson, is now out with an injury. And now, who do they have left? Who are they going to start in at goalie now?
So right now, Liverpool do have Loris Karius at Besiktas on loan that they could recall, but I highly doubt they will, because although Adrian is injured, he is only injured for just a couple of weeks, so they don't need him for too long. And Alisson is out with a calf injury they picked up against the Norwich game, unfortunately, when trying to clear a ball, and he will be out for 6 weeks. So we'll have to see about that. But for now, in terms of the goalkeeping, I guess, order, or like their backlog, basically, they have Andy Longergan, who is a backup goalkeeper who previously played in Rochdale last season, to kind of give you an idea of how far back the backups are going. And then they also have a youth player, Kevin. His name is escapes me because it is a very peculiar Irish name, but it's basically pronounced Kevin once you put everything together. But basically, he is a 20-year-old youth keeper, and he's one to watch for Liverpool, except he's just behind Alisson, who is arguably one of the best keepers, if not the best keeper in the world currently. So highly doubt he'll get too much playing time, but this could be his opportunity to start against Southampton. So although, if you just look at FIFA, this guy, Kevin, is only 58 overall. He's very promising. And with a backline of Van Dijk, Joe Gomez, Trent, and Robertson, you could pretty much put most keepers behind that. And then against the Southampton team, I think we'll be fine for at least a week. And then we can assess and see how Adrian is doing for the following game after that. But for now, I feel like Liverpool will be fine. But it's insane that to look into the youth academy to pull a keeper out. Usually you don't see keepers get injured, but now both Liverpool starting and backup keepers are injured.
Yeah, that to me is like very interesting. And as you said, I think they have to go roll with the youth on that one, because playing a 35-year-old that was playing in Rochdale last season is not very promising. Maybe if it was Czech, but Czech wasn't even that good last season, as, you know, getting very old. But I mean, that's just very interesting. It's quite odd that your two backup keeper, like your starting keeper and your backup keeper, get injured in a matter of weeks, like literally 1 week, like 1 week split apart. They're injured.
But you also don't want to overlook the fact that Liverpool did win their first piece of silverware. They won the UEFA Super Cup, the fourth one overall. So I'm very happy about that. Liverpool have got silverware already this season against Chelsea. And Chelsea, although we did mention that their defense and their team weren't really as strong against Manchester United, they did hold their own against Liverpool, which is very surprising to me, because I went into this game expecting, although I know Chelsea is a very good team,
I thought Liverpool were going to be dominant.
And it was very close, which is very surprising. It went all the way to penalties, and they only won 5-4. Because Tammy Abraham had a penalty saved, and he was the fifth taker for Chelsea.
And I was talking about the Tammy Abraham save. I thought it was really cool that Marcus Rashford and a bunch of other people kind of came and supported Tammy Abraham. Because I believe after he missed, there was racist chants or racist remarks, basically by the fans, given to him during the game after he missed. But then we saw players such as Rashford and a couple other youngsters that came to his support. And I thought that was really cool. That's basically, you know, that's beyond football. That's like, you know, players supporting each other. So I thought that was really cool. But in general, I thought I thought Chelsea looked a lot better in this game. They definitely looked like Lampard definitely looked like they gave the team like a big talking to. And basically, I felt like Lampard probably said like, hey, we can't get embarrassed here again. So I think they gave a really big effort. And Christian Pulisic obviously started and he had a much better impact in this game. And I think going forward, I'm not just saying this because, you know, I'm American, but I think Pulisic needs to be in that front three somehow because he's just such a dynamic player. And I feel like he has so much potential to grow and he just needs as many reps as he can get.
And he put a dime for Giroud and cut through the Liverpool defense, which is very, very difficult to do. So for someone like Pulisic to do that in his second professional game for Chelsea, that is, that's pretty big. So I think if we haven't really mentioned enough, Pulisic needs to start. I don't know what Lampard's doing, but he basically needs to start him every game. I don't care if he's tired. He has to start him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has to start him. But Sadio Mane got on the score sheet, a double for him. Mohamed Salah scored against this Norwich game. Seems like the front three is back and clicking. Even though they're scoring goals at different games, they're scoring goals this early on. I think that bodes well for Liverpool.
Defense is a little alarming.
Do you
especially watching that Norwich game, which is why I thought Norwich did a little bit better than I was expecting. I thought it was just going to be just bulldoze, steamroll over them. But Norwich actually did have 12 shots against Liverpool, which is 12 more than usually I was anticipating from a team like that. But
yeah,
even in this Chelsea game, they were split apart. And I know they didn't have Alisson in goal, but even then, there are times when Liverpool's defense are able to stop teams entirely from even taking a shot. So it's looking a lot less strong from this defense this season.
Yeah, I was going to say that, you know, in a preview episode, I mentioned that what scared me with Liverpool was that they didn't make any like big splash money signings this summer to kind of get the squad, just get get the squad on deck right there. But the fact that basically the starting 11 is pretty much the same as it was last year and they didn't really add anyone, do you feel like some complacency is going to set in? Because as you said, against the Norwich team and in this Chelsea game, the defense hasn't looked as sharp as it did last season. Obviously, they're still scoring a lot of goals, but the defense is where you need to be, really have your mind sharp. And the fact that they haven't had it yet, is that a bit alarming, or do you think that's just like the early season jitters, basically?
I feel like it would be some early season jitters, and I think losing Alisson did throw them off the rhythm a little bit because Alisson, of course, is a key player in that back five because he is the player who will be yelling at the center backs, yelling at the fullbacks to cover players or to move into certain areas to cover when he sees something that's approaching from the opposition offense that maybe they didn't see. So having Alisson also as a clutch goalkeeper, just making those insane saves, also does play a factor as well. Adrian's good. He's very lucky in the fact that he just literally came in and then a week later he's winning the Super Cup for Liverpool. But he's no Alisson.
Yeah, I was about to say he's no Alisson, but he's like Romero for Manchester United. He's a good backup, but he's not De Gea. You know, this is just a different aura of the back line when you have David De Gea back there compared to Serge Romero. But they're just backups. They get their job done.
Once Alisson is back, we'll have to reassess the defense again. But for now, I think it'll be good enough to win out the games remaining until Alisson is back. Because, of course, the front three is looking strong as ever. Luckily, after even Mane just coming back from the Africa Cup of Nations, like, so short, so, like, not too long ago, so it's looking good. I'm very confident about Liverpool, especially after winning a trophy like this. So I think their confidence will be high.
Yeah, it's not bad to start off the season with the European trophy. And quickly previewing the games that we kind of highlighted for this weekend. Obviously, the big one, Manchester City versus Tottenham. It seems like between these two, obviously, we know the history. Last year in the Champions League semifinal, crazy results happening in the Champions League. And then obviously when they met each other in Premier League, they always seems like a big goal scoring affair. I'm expecting another goal scoring affair. I would say maybe 2-1 City. City pick up the 2-1 win here.
the Etihad is not known as a very prolific arena, a very prolific stadium, and that is a fortress because they don't really have, you know, the pedigree that other big European teams have. And neither does Tottenham as well, but Tottenham do have the ability to really disrupt a team despite being away, or Tottenham being away. And Heung-min Son, a key player, did not play in that first game because of a red card that he picked up in the final game of last season. So he will be starting, he should be starting this next game. And I think against a City side, it could be very volatile in terms of what the scoreline could be. But I think it will be a high-scoring game too. But I think even though Tottenham did win and beat Man City in the Champions League last season, I think also City will win. But I think it'll be 3-2. I think it'll be pretty high-scoring, yeah.
Oh, wow, 3-2. I was leaning towards 3-2, but I thought, you know, early season I would err on the side of caution, so I went 2-1. But we both predict City winning here. Next game up. Wolverhampton Wolves versus Manchester United. Big game here because we saw Wolves last season against the top six. They absolutely dominated and they somehow found a way to disrupt the rhythm of most top six sides, whether that was from City all the way down to Manchester United. This game is really, really important to watch because Manchester United coming off that 4-0 win. This is where is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer really going to take this team forward? This is the match that I'm really concerned about because it's easy to get amped up for playing Chelsea, but can you get yourself amped up to play Wolverhampton Wolves? So this is going to be a big one to watch. I think just because how strong the United squad looked last week, I think they go in and they come out a 2-0 with a 2-0 victory.
For me, usually when you see a team like Wolverhampton Wolves that has a back three, when they play stronger teams, like, say, a top six team, you can shift the right and left mids to be further back and kind of hang back a little bit more often. So you'll see, like, a back line of five. So I think they'll probably do that, especially seeing how United can easily break teams down on the counterattack. So if after seeing that, I think Wolves will probably sit a little deeper and then try to, you know, wait out the game and try to go for the 0-0 or maybe win 1-0. But I think United, based on that momentum from the first game, I think they can get a scrappy 1-0 victory. So I see United winning 1-0 in this game.
Yeah, and also with the back three, you know, when you do play a back three system, you kind of rely on your center backs to kind of play a little bit more on the ball and have, you know, that passing ability. So we saw with United last week, they are emphasizing the high press now. And with the likes of Rashford and Martial running at you and, you know, Lingard, throw Lingard in there, that's a really pacey front three to run at you and continually pressing you. So that could lead into a bunch of problems as well. But we both suspect United winning, and I do. I think they will. And then the last game, Chelsea versus Leicester City. Big game here because Chelsea, obviously losing 4-0, not the best result for them. Played a lot better in the UEFA Super Cup, but Frank Lampard will be looking for his first win as Chelsea manager. But I think it may have to wait for another week. I think it will be a 1-1 draw at Stamford Bridge.
It's very funny because I was also suspecting a 1-1 draw as well. Because although Chelsea, they did pretty well against Liverpool in the Super Cup, playing a Brendan Rodgers side who did very well in the latter half of last season, and did decently well against Wolves this past weekend, I think it'll be another challenge for Chelsea, but also for Leicester as well. So I don't really see either one team or one team in particular really being stronger. So I'd say a 1-1 as well. But it's going to be very, very scrappy, let's say. It's not going to be very organized.
Yeah, and it's going to be cool to see the atmosphere inside Stamford Bridge. That's Frank Lampard's Premier League debut as Chelsea manager. So it'll be very, very cool to see that atmosphere there. But I think, you know, there's still kinks in his squad he's got to work out. And because of that, it's going to be a 1-1 draw. But, you know, that kind of does it for us for this episode. Please make sure to leave a rating, comment, and subscribe. Tell us what you don't like. Tell us what you like. Bit of a hectic schedule for both of us this past week, but eventually, don't worry, like next week and the weeks after that, we're going to have much more of a concrete schedule. Just this week kind of got with us with work and everything, but expect the episodes to keep keep coming in. Yeah. But we are excited. Episode 2 of season 2, man. Mm-hmm. It's been fun. But thank you guys so much. That'll do it for us for this episode. Peace.
Peace.